There's no I in team, but there is one in Indeed, and that's the hiring platform that you need to build yours. When you're hiring, you need Indeed. Instead of spending hours on multiple job sites searching for candidates with the right skills, Indeed's a powerful hiring platform that can help you do it all. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it makes hiring all in one place so easy because Indeed does the hard work for you. They show you the candidates whose resumes on Indeed fit your description immediately after you post so you can hire faster. Join more than 3 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Start hiring now with a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Offer good for a limited time. Claim your $75 credit now at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. And support the show by saying that you heard it on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Before we get started with this episode of Benched with Bubba, I wanted to talk to you about a great new way to play daily fantasy sports. I've talked about it a ton. If you're a regular listener, you know about it. It is Superdraft. It is a great way to play daily fantasy sports. No prices. You play the guys you want. It's an exclusive multiplier point system. The point system is similar to FanDuel, but when you pick your guys, if there's more of a gamble when you pick them, you get a higher multiplier. So take the chances you want or play the chalk that you like, whatever you want, but it's awesome. Go to Superdraft in your app store. Check it out. When you create your account, use promo code Bubba to get you all set up. When you make your first deposit, you get a free $10 deposit bonus. Right now, they got baseball, football, golf, and then basketball and hockey are coming right around the corner. So go check it out. Superdraft in your app store. Promo code Bubba when you set up your account. Free $10 deposit bonus. Also, if you can rate and review on iTunes, I'd much appreciate it. It would help the podcast out quite a bit. Just an FYI, awesome podcast. Spore brings the hammer. We had a little bit of technical difficulties here and there. I cleaned it up the best I could. Listen to it all, though. Awesome, awesome stuff. But a rate and review would be much appreciated. But for now, Bench with Bubba, episode 214 with Paul Spore of Fangraphs and Rotographs, talking a little 2020 starting pitchers. Check it out. Back, everybody, to another episode of Benched with Bubba, episode 214. I'm going to talk a little 2020 starting pitcher outlook for your fantasy baseball teams. In order to do so, joined by a special guest, one of the pitching gurus in fantasy baseball. You can find him on Twitter at Spore, all over Fangraphs, and much, much more. Paul, how we doing, man?
Bubba, I'm well. How you doing?
I'm doing on a Thursday as the baseball season winds down. Got a little Phillies Nats on the tube. What's just your overall thoughts? We don't have to go super deep into this. I know you talk about it a lot, but with this season, the way pitching was kind of wild, just what's your overall thoughts looking at 2020 right now, as a lot will change, but you have some drafts coming up in a few weeks. What's your thoughts on 2020 SP right now?
You know, I don't know that it's going to change too much from what I was looking at this year, which is, you know, I term something called the glob, whatever you want to call it, where the talent really starts to consolidate and you get into these ranking areas where there's 30, 40, maybe even 50 pitchers that you can make a case to rank them in virtually any order. I do think it starts earlier now, though, right? We're aging some of our studs out a little bit. Kluber, you know, has come back to the pack with his health, partly not on his own, you know, not something that he could control as a batted ball, but he wasn't pitching well before then. And, you know, Chris Sale obviously had a tough season. He's kind of come back to the pack. I think Snell's still up there, but he had a tough season with health. So I think a glob starts even sooner. Now there's like an upper tier glob, and then there's the giant one. And I think you need to kind of make your picks there, though. Normally when there's a talent glob like that, people want to say, well, I'll take what the draft gives me. I choose to be more aggressive and get the guys I truly believe in, though. I don't want to be stuck with somebody that I don't really trust. So I'm going to be proactive. I'm open to a first round or second round starter. It's not a must. And I do think that little tiers of pitching, say from pitcher 15 to 40, can still be a fruitful area.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with you. I think one of the biggest takeaways there is a pitcher you can trust, because there's a lot of those guys after the globs that you're speaking of when you get to rounds five and beyond, probably even four sort of and beyond, where it gets pretty murky. And absolutely, that's where you got to hit and miss. And I don't remember the exact number. I believe Ariel Cohen's wrote about it and some others, where it's like 20-25% of those guys pan out, whereas the top 15 or so, as you're saying, really a lot more stability there. And something you can talk about. And right before we started recording, I was on Twitter and Brian Slack tweeted out nicely the top 10 in the NFBC main. He put all their first three picks, and most of them had at least one ace, if not two. So,
oh man, he took an article idea. I was going to do that. That's great though. Brian Slack's awesome. I was going to go back and look and kind of see what the pitch. I actually was in the league with the number one team. Not why I had a bad season. I'd love to blame it on that. But yeah, it was kind of interesting to see this team was built there. And I think we're seeing it already. I mean, drafts have already started. Got another draft coming up in Arizona. I saw the two Irvins a lot here. And people are attacking their pitching. They want to have one within those first three picks.
Yeah, no doubt about it. So let's talk about a few guys for anybody doing early drafts or, you know, wants to get an idea. You know, two early mocks are in the books. Again, thanks to Mason for doing those year after year. But let's talk about first some guys that one would say overachieved ADP this past year. Mm-hmm. We'll start with Shane Bieber, who was going around pick 126 in NFBCs this year in the final month leading up to the season. You know, two early mocks has him going around pick 29. He's been a beast. I was one of the guys that kind of doubted him. I saw too much pitch to contact. I didn't see how this was going to develop, and he's been awesome. Are you buying that this guy is the same guy we're going to see going forward, or do we see more of a revert to what you and I might have saw coming into 2019?
Me and perhaps for you as well, it was a wait and see. I didn't believe it yet. I understood that it could be there, but I wasn't ready to take the risk that other folks were. I've done the Michael Pineda experience. I've done the Jeff Samardzija experience, and I was seeing a lot of similarities there where he gets the strikeouts, he limits the walks, but he's a home run machine, and that's what I worried about with Bieber. It's really between command and control are guys like that. They can control the zone. They can fill up the zone all day, but they're not quality strikes all the time. And they're so set on not walking guys that they'll give in. And so on that 3-2 count, throwing something that's very hittable, 3-1, even more hittable, you know. And so he was getting beaten around the yard, Bieber was. Well, this year, I think we really saw the command dial up. Now, the home runs were still there, but they were solo shots. And the home runs were there for just about everybody this year. So I'm reluctant to really hold that against Bieber. While we can say maybe the ERA might come back a little bit, let's say a couple more hits drop in and maybe he doesn't lead the AL in walks, so the homers are a bit more damaging. I think the strikeouts are going to remain great. And not only that, but the overall volume. I think this guy's going to challenge for innings crowns, Shane Bieber is. Mm-hmm. And so particularly in today's game as up from individual players is so important. So I'm pretty bought in here. I actually had him ranked 7th in my first run. And again, the strikeout walk ratio with the improved aim and loads of innings, of course, if he stays healthy, but that's a risk for every pitcher. So I'm even reluctant to say that. I don't want to say that every time with every pitcher. But yeah, I really like Shane here. I wasn't ready to buy in, but once I started to see that command, I was like, okay, he started to move up my rankings, even though I didn't have him. You know, I didn't get to get him at the draft table, but I was happy to say I'm wrong. He did develop, and congrats to those who bet on the come.
Yeah, because he was in that kind of area where it was Eduardo Rodriguez, Nick Pivetta, Shane Bieber, all kind of going around the same spot. I think most of us were looking at Pivetta. I liked Erod a bit too, and that's worked out in the end. But Shane Bieber, I didn't see it coming. And a big part you mentioned is the inning eating ability. That's something we don't see in this era of baseball. It's like, 6 innings is obviously it's a stupid quality start, but people think it's the goal is to get 6 innings, and that's not how it used to be when you and I started watching baseball. So
not at all.
A lot of that's changed.
You can make a case. We talk about win loss and how worthless it is in today's game because it's 5-6 innings. It's always been flawed win loss as far as like a talent judge, but at least back in the day when guys were minimum going 7, they had a tough day if they only went 7. They were out there 8 or 9, at least they had more control over their win loss. And so you could look at a 22-7 record and actually say that there was something more to it than the team's support. But yeah, these days with all the 5-inning, 6-inning, you have so much volatility in a win loss that it tells you nothing about the actual pitcher.
Yeah, nothing at all. And you want to talk about going throwback style. As we're recording here, the Rangers are up 7-5. Mike Minor had 120 pitches through 8, and he's going out for the 9th in that ball game.
I'll tell you what, I'm gonna go full homer or central focused on myself because nobody cares. Got him on my fantasy team, and I need the complete game because what you didn't say is that he's given up 5 earned on 10 hits. So he actually could save this. And he has the 2 outs now. He's 1 out away from getting it. I think they actually took him out for the last complete game. I think the game's over now. But isn't that such an old school game right there? Yeah, they let Leclerc get the 1 out save. Wow. I wonder if that help some folks. By the way, how much crazy stuff is happening this week where you know these like 2 low-level players are winning leagues? John Birdie with 4 steals in a game. Garrett Hampson, a guy I loved coming into the year, absolutely dominating. I don't want to derail us from the pitching stuff, but this Mike Minor or even the Jose Leclerc 1 out save, this stuff is changing leagues right now.
Yeah, it's absolutely crazy. I do a podcast with Toby Batflip Crazy, and he's been big on John Birdie for those steals, and he has them everywhere. So when he stole 4 bases the other night, it was like backflip central for him.
Absolutely. And then, 4 in a game? Are you kidding me?
Well, in that same night, Dakota Hudson saves both games of a doubleheader. 2 saves.
Daniel Hudson, yes.
Daniel, yes. Daniel,
that's another one who's, changing leagues to get 2 saves in 1 day from your third-tier starter or closer, excuse me. It's absolutely crazy. And I kind of love it.
Well, then you have all these other guys getting shut down, like Acuna and Josh Bell and Edward Mondesi and all these guys where you're like, okay, I was relying on you, and now John Birdies of the world are carrying us.
That's the sad part, though, right, is that, I don't mind when the glue guys, the back-end guys are doing stuff, but they're actually starting for so many people because of all these shutdowns. And I do wonder if we maybe have to start going the fantasy football route and eliminating the last couple weeks. I know some folks want to end leagues on September 1st. Yeah. I don't know that I'm there, but it's getting rough. And the roughest thing, and again, to make it centric on this league I just talked about, just for this example, it's a head-to-head league. When they don't put guys on the IL, I now have a roster do anything with Christian Yelich because it's a keeper league. I can't cut him. And so that's always frustrating about the expanded rosters. Now, maybe that changes next year when they go down to, I believe, just 28 in September. But what are your thoughts on like ending seasons earlier than the end of the season?
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm not ready to go there yet. I know the discussion has gotten much bigger. Our buddy Joe P. Sapia is one of the biggest advocates for it. I've seen many others mention it. I think the biggest thing is I can't remember what show I heard it on, but they're starting to make leagues where the commissioner can go in and put guys on the IL that aren't like, and that would be huge.
I have a CBS NL only league, and if show me a note on RotoWire or RotoWorld that says that he's out for the year, I'll put him on the IL for you. But in this ESPN league I'm in, they don't have that autonomy, and so They need to have those sort of tools because it's rough, and you don't want to limit guys and have them lose because of something silly like that that's out of their control.
Exactly.
And so I think maybe the ending early is more viable for head to head than Roto, because Roto, we play start to finish. Stuff happens, and it gets a little wonky in September, but it's a little wonky in May or June, and we don't notice it because it's May or June. Just because it's September and it gets a I don't know that we necessarily have to end early in Roto specifically. Head-to-head, I'm a little bit more open to it.
Yeah, head-to-head stinks, and that's why I'm not the biggest head-to-head fan, because Roto shows you a good baseball team over a whole season, kind of what we watch on TV. But head-to-head is kind of a week-to-week thing, and when you get kind of screwed in the end like this, it really does hurt what really was a great season and showed you were a very good fantasy team. Mm-hmm. You might not end with the crown, though. It's kind of a shame. It's kind of a mixed bag there. But there's tons
of ways
to do it.
But that is what head-to-head is.
Yes, it is. And you know that going into it.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's my biggest pet peeve, or I guess argument I tell people that are on the other fence of complaining about it. I said, well, you signed up for this.
That's exactly what you signed up for. Yep.
Yeah. It's not like this is new. This isn't the first time we've seen it. So it will be interesting to see how things change, though. It definitely will. It's very good topics. I'm pretty sure it'll be talked about a lot this offseason, because this year just seemed like it was a little more than normal. But you brought up a great point. When they change it to 28 players next year, that has to affect, you know, guys will go on the IL, so on and so forth. That should have a difference.
I really hope so. And we always have to be careful about recency bias. Are we overreacting to it this year? I don't think we are, but I also didn't do the research to go see how many stars got hurt last year. So it's one of those things that I'm kind of in between on, but I do think a lot of it's going to be fixed next year with the change.
Yeah, it feels like it's more than the normal, but you're right. It could be something really minute in the end of it. When you're speaking recency bias, before we go back to pitching, the bouncy ball we're seeing this year, two years ago we saw it, then it didn't really happen last year. It's here this year. I don't know what to expect. None of us know what to expect, but how are you game planning for that come draft time?
I mean, so there was an article out, I believe, goodness, why can't I think of his name? Maury Brown. I was going to say Maury Willis, the baseball player. Maury Brown over at had an article quoting Manfred as saying that something needs to be done. Like they want to do something about the ball. Now that didn't get into any specifics to suggest that they were going to change it next year or whatnot. But I think I'm going to mostly assume that it's going to be the same with maybe, you know, a 10% dip or something. But I'm not going to make too many distinctions. Here's the thing. If we assume it's going to be the same and it's not, I don't think we're hurt more than if you assume it's going to be different and it's the same. I think you'd be more hurt planning for a drop off that doesn't come than you would. I'm twisting myself around. If you don't act as though it's going to be the same, you know, just pretend that it's going to be the same offense and draft accordingly, and then it isn't, I think you'll be set up just fine because you'll be stocked in power. You'll have some front end pitching. If it changes and some of the middle tier pitching comes up because the ball, you're in any worse position. So I would say just operate as pretty much status quo. If they do change the ball, you'll be fine.
I think that's very, very sound advice, and be fun to see how that takes place next year. So we can all panic on steals and pitching and leave the power alone. That sounds like the fun part there. Let's go back to Mike Minor. We'll jump around here for a second. He went around 337 last year in an FBC. In the two early mocks, he went around pick 125. He had a really good start to the year. The end of the year kind of was jumbled mess, like goods and bads in there.
For sure.
How do you go forward with him? Because that ballpark is always going to be hitter friendly, but he seemed to do better than most there.
He does. And two things. Well, his breakout, Mike Minor's kind of surge started in the second half of last year. If you were really kind of keyed in on what he did down the stretch last year, you might have been in on him and taken that massive discount on Minor, getting him after pick 300 and just benefiting greatly. Secondly, they're putting a roof over Globe Life. I think it's actually a new stadium altogether.
New ballpark.
And so with a roof, that's going to curb some of the effects of the climate. It'll be, of course, climate controlled. And so that's going to help things too. So even if you are worried about some of these home runs pop up late, in fact, the last three starts in particular, 18 runs, including today, 18 runs. And I believe, because when I first did it, I ran the numbers when I was making my notes here, it was 18 and 18, but he went those extra inning and 2/3. So I think 19 and 2/3, but 18 runs. Oakland shellacked him twice, and Boston, they still hit him, right? No matter how deep you go into a game, a 5 earned run outing can't be good, because even if you go 9, that's a 5 ERA, and he went 8-2. So the last three starts of the season were rough, but before that, he'd had a 3.08 ERA through 29 starts. So I like Minor. In fact, we can parlay it into or go it right into his teammate, Lance Lynn. I think they're both nice lefty-righty workhorses. Mike calling him a workhorse feels weird because of the injuries that he went through, where he actually missed two full seasons, 15 and 16 all told. But before that, he was developing into a bit of a workhorse. He comes back, has the great relief year with KC, goes to Texas. No one wants a piece of Mike Minor in Texas. He's a home run guy. His home runs didn't really go up. They kind of stayed the same, and he's been really good. I trust Minor and Lynn to be perfectly solid. I'm open to them at their ADPs. I like a little bit more because I think he is the true workhorse. He has not had anywhere near the health scenarios that Minor has, but Minor's had all sorts of stuff. So I like Lynn more, but I think both at their price, I'm open to taking them if they're there when I'm kind of looking for a pitcher.
No, I'm with you there. I think it's very interesting, Lynn. You get a little more of a discount too. And I think the upside's, I guess to me, it feels like the upside's better with Lynn, more strikeout upside, kind of more, I don't know, the way I'd say it is more like a bulldog mentality where he's going to gut it out in those tough games in Texas, or minor, maybe not. I think there's a lot to like that. And to think about, we were all laughing at that contract last year.
I know. And, you know, the thing of it is, hindsight, of course, is easy now because we saw how well he's pitched. But two things. One, we should have been more keyed in on what Lance Lynn did with New York. He only had a 4.14 ERA, but it was a 2.17 FIP. His underlying skills were absolutely brilliant. If he hadn't allowed 9.6 hits per nine, which I'm sure had an inflated BABIP tied to it, he'd have been much better with New York, and I think we'd have been more interested in it. Secondly, 3-for-30, you can post a 5.20 ERA for 150 innings and be worth 10 mil in major league dollars. Like, they can't lose on that contract when it's 3-for-30. And frankly, the year that he just put up 201 innings of a 3.76 ERA for Lance Lynn, that basically earned the whole contract. I mean, he has to do virtually nothing for that's just the way that the economics work in the game these days, that 10 mil a year for a pitcher that you can feel pretty comfortably is going to get at least 175, 180 innings of quality work. That's easily worth 10 mil. They stole Lance Lynn.
And that's a great point. They basically got 2 years free, like you said. So, and with Texas, if they continue to struggle, now you flip them, doesn't cost you anything. You get something back. There's a lot they can do with that. They got Minor cheap. They got Lynn cheap. Their team is getting younger and better, but I think they still have a ways to go in that division with the Astros and company. But it is interesting to see how they made that work. Let's go to another young team, the Chicago White Sox, who are getting closer and closer, but still seem to have a little bit of a gap there to where they need to go. But Lucas Giolito, man, he went around pick 444 last year in NFBCs. But he had this monster season. ADP, people are loving him, went around pick 53. We saw some highs and lows with Giolito, but way more highs than lows. How do you feel about him going forward? Because what people forget, this was a former number one pick that just didn't pan out with the Nats.
Yeah, he really was. And he had a chance to be the number one overall if he hadn't had Tommy John like coming out of high school. And so he dropped down to 16 because of that. I don't think it was set in stone by draft, but shortly after it was like, okay, well, he's going to have the TJ and go and move forward with that. He was literally the worst pitcher in baseball last year. When you factor in the fact that he made 32 starts, Lucas Giolito did, he walked the most in the AL with 90, and he gave up the most earned runs in baseball with 18. I think you can quantifiably say he was the worst pitcher in baseball, to the point where I wasn't even ranking him season. I think I had him deep on my initial list in March. He got off to a wobbly start. He had a 6.19 ERA through three starts. I'm like, here we go again. I mean, Giolito just sucks. And so I took him off my list. Wasn't even ranking him. To then, from that point on, and by the way, his next start after the first three was only 2 2/3 because he got hurt. So he was pitching brilliantly, 5 strikeouts, 2 2/3, no hits, and then hits the IL. But from that point, 26 starts of a 3.14 ERA with 210 strikeouts in 160 2/3 innings. You mentioned there were some ups and downs, particularly with the home run rate in the second half. But I think the second half struggles are a little bit overstated, because even if all he does next year is post the same 3.76 ERA that he had in the second half with a 35% strikeout rate and 29% strikeout minus walk, which means he has a 6% walk rate, I'll take that all day. Now, you're paying for an ERA better than that, but with that number of strikeouts, factor in a little bit of improvement for the White Sox, so hopefully he can at least maintain a third, if not do something better. Of course, predicting wins is difficult, but I think that they're on an upward trajectory. I am a little surprised with exactly how high he's going, but I will say, from the time that Giolito went about pick 53 on average to now, one of my favorites that we're going to dive into a bit later, Noah Syndergaard, has really gone on my crap list. I'm starting to peel back. He's so maddening, Bubba. I just don't understand it.
He's full tilting
between excellent and awful the way he does, and against the teams that he does. The opposition doesn't matter. When Noah Syndergaard is off, me, you, and seven dudes are going to put up 4 or 5 runs. When he's on, the 27 Yankees in their prime, and he's going to strike out 15 of them. It's maddening, though. And so, you know, Giolito went ahead of Thor in those two early mocks, and I was like, nah, I don't think I would do that. Now I'm more open to it. But guys like maybe Charlie Morton, Zach Greinke, they're more boring, I understand. I think I might still take those. They're at least all three should be closer. He went about 12 picks higher than them, so about a round if you're doing 12 teamers. These were 15 teamers, so not quite a round. I like those three closer together, but I really do like Giolito. I became sold on him pretty quickly into the breakout after really pushing away from him when I thought that he was terrible, but he went up on guys that that have pedigree and are, you know, expected to perform at a particular level. Now, you can only do so much, right? In a dynasty league, maybe that just means hanging on to them and reserving them. In like 15 team mix, though, like you can't be expected to have drafted Lucas Giolito and then held on through those first three starts when he had a 6.19 ERA, because even if you took him with your last pick, it looked like same old, same old. Mm-hmm. And so you cut him, and then he was a free agent and somebody got a huge windfall. But I think what we are learning more and more every year, and this is just the way the game is now, is you have to jump quickly when things start to change and then ask questions later. So the second that he comes off the IL and he beasts Boston and Cleveland, it was 3 earned and 12 and a third innings over those two starts for Lucas Giolito. You have to jump right there and then just see what's what. He ended up dominating Toronto back-to-back starts and then a shutout at Houston. And that was when you knew he kind of arrived. And so, you know, I think it's loosened my thresholds of when I jump on somebody that has the pedigree and shows an inkling of it. There's going to be times where I'm wrong and go right back to being a dumpster again two starts later. But I'm going to take those shots because you never know when you're going to find that lightning.
Yeah, no, and that's a good point with Giolito. And we've tried it with other pitchers in the past. There's always a couple every year that take that step that people don't think they're going to take. And I remember when Giolito threw that shutout against Houston, it basically broke Twitter that night. It was a wild night how he just dominated a really, really good team, a healthy team in Houston at that point in time. So
I actually started him in the main event.
That's a real ballsy move at that point in time in the season.
And you know what? Noah Syndergaard crapped all over the outing shortly thereafter. It might have been the same night. I actually have both their pages up here. So let me – no, it was the very next day. Oh, and do you want to know what team he faced, Bubba?
The Marlins.
What team? No, he had faced the Marlins to start before. He faced the AL Marlins, the Detroit Tigers. Oh, he gave 6 earned on 10 hits in 5 1/3. And maybe that should have been the day that I quit Noah Syndergaard. I don't know how I lasted with him the rest of the entire season. You know, I make this move here. I'm like, listen, it's early. I like what Giolito's doing. I'm going to take this chance here. And of course, it panned out even more brilliantly than I could have ever expected. And I'm feeling myself. And the very next day, the rug is completely pulled out from under me.
Yeah, Noah Syndergaard has been known to do that this year. And like you said, you want to quit him. I quit him going into this year. I just can't handle a guy. It's almost like, you know, Giolito's awesome. The kind of overachievers, not the right word, but they overachieved what we expected.
Yes.
Where Thor just underachieved so much because you see that ceiling and he's always so far away from it. It's so frustrating that it's just like, you know what? you want to just break something sometimes when he's on the mound. It's crazy. You know the other night against Miami was another example. It's just ridiculous.
And ruining seasons, I'm sure. Saying, okay, I'm still going to stick with here last week because it's Miami. He can't hurt me. And what does he do? He hurts you. Steven Matz is on my crap list for that as well in my head to head league. But yeah, it's going to be frustrating if Thor does put it together and put up like, you know, another one of the 284 innings in 2016 because I stuck with him so long, and then he'll do it when I finally quit him. At his current price, he's just not performing to a level that serves the 65th overall pick, or excuse me, 55th is where he was going in those two early mocks. Yeah. And I'm not going to pay it that round.
Nope, I passed on him. I know Justin was happy to get him, but I'll pass on him every time. I'll take, I think I took Aaron Nola over him. I'll take that gamble. But
I don't blame you.
Let's go to Jack Flaherty. This is a guy that people were high on. I'm not saying they weren't. He went pick 51 this past year, finished his ADPs around 43 in the two early mocks. But what Jack Flaherty has done in the second half of the season, I believe an ERA below zero, I mean below one in the second half of the season.
I like it's better that you say below zero. Below That's zero, how zero, good he was. Yeah, he was
ridiculous. He was
taking runs away.
It felt like that at times. Like if you're a Cubs fan, you can only imagine.
Oh, I know, right? I mean, he was winning games to minus one. No, he's absolutely bananas. I mean, this is, speaking of the Cubs, this is a Jake Arrieta-esque second half from, what was it, 2015. Germán Márquez second half from last year. Now, here's the thing, though. I invoke those names on purpose because what do we know from that? It last. And so while it is great, and I do believe that Jack Flaherty is very good, and I would, if I did a re-rank today, I would move him up from the 18 spot that I had. I'd probably move him closer to 13, 14, but I think he was 10. It was 11 and pick 43. I think that's a little bit higher than I would take Strasburg. I think I'm still going to take Sale, even Corbin, and then Castillo, Giolito, Flaherty's a trio that I have pretty close together. I think the second half tax, Flaherty's going to price me out, even if it's by 10 picks. Bubba, you know this. When we're up in the top 50, 5-6 pick difference is big. It doesn't seem like much, but at that level, 5, 6, 7, 10 picks, that's a big difference. Obviously, huge. Once we get to pick 150, 150 to 160 is nothing. And then, you know, it moves down. But at this point, 42, where Flaherty went, or 43 on average in the two early months, that's a little too rich for my blood. I would wait the 10 picks and take the aforementioned Giolito.
No, I could feel that big time. That's why I wanted to mention him. And then another guy that obviously wasn't as strong as Flaherty and Giolito is Zach Wheeler, who in August had three straight starts of 5-earned, 3-earned, and 5-earned. And you're starting to think, oh, no, here we go. Giving up a ton of hard contact. In his last five starts to finish the year, 1-earned run in every single one of those starts, 3 straight starts of 7 innings pitched. He looked outstanding, tried to keep the Mets in the race. Ends the year, he might have one more start to go. It has an ERA below 4. It was a rocky season for Wheeler, but we saw signs of what we did like. Now there's a good chance he won't be in New York next year, which will be nice. But what are you thinking of a guy like Zach Wheeler, who you can get, you know, almost 30, 40 picks later in some drafts, or what was the two early mocks? Pick 140 right now. People are down on Zach Wheeler.
And I'm not going to be. I was actually really bought in coming into this year. And so I was keyed in on exactly what was going on because I had him on so many leagues, and it was kind of that up and down. Interesting thing too, because he wrote another big second half, but the actual breakdown was quite a bit different this year. It was a 469 first half and a 277 second half if you just do the all-star breakdown this year. Last year, it was a 540 ERA through May, but then the last 4 months of the season was a 252. So it was a little bit more of an extended period of for Wheeler last year, but I'm still impressed by the way he finished, and I'm eager to see where he lands. That's gonna decide things. I do think that if the Angels can't reel in Garrett Cole, who they seem to be early in on right now, bringing him back out to California, because I mean they have to stay aggressive with Trout and Otani. I think Wheeler would make a good consolation prize for them. First off, he's going to be markedly cheaper. He won't be but he will be markedly cheaper than Cole. And I think that would be a decent fit for them to kind of headline their rotation. I still really like Zach Wheeler. And when he's on, he's got a great fastball and then a deep secondary arsenal that can really carry him. And so, you know, if he kind of goes out to LA for the Angels, I don't think Zach Wheeler's going to really see his price skyrocket much. In fact, I think he's going to kind of live in this 139 range. You know, we've talked a lot in the two early mocks across the industry about guys who are going to go up, maybe some guys who are going to go down. I think Wheeler's going to kind of stay where he is. I don't know that there's a situation outside of obviously Houston. Anybody that goes to Houston as a pitcher, we know that they automatically go up. I'm not going to get Zach Wheeler either because I don't think they're going to re-sign Cole. I think they're going to stick with what they have in-house. But yeah, I don't think there's a situation where Wheeler's price is going to go way high. So I'm going to buy at this 140 level.
Yeah, I'd be very, very happy to get him around about 140. I was high on him coming into the year as well. I didn't get him anywhere because apparently there's people higher than me on him. But you mentioned Garrett Cole. Yeah. I know we weren't last year in TGFBI together, this year. But just for fun, real quick, you said Cole's not going back to Houston. Where do you think he goes?
I do think the Angels are gonna pony up for him. You know, they've made some mistakes with some big contracts, but a little bit different than either of those. I mean, the thing of it is, you didn't really need hindsight to understand that the Pujols and Hamilton deals weren't set up to really succeed. I do think a mega deal for Cole is a bit more set up. First off, he is on the right side of 30, at least for at least another year. Be 29 next season. He should be coming off of a Cy Young win or Cy Young runner up. I'm a Verlander guy. I'm a Tiger fan. Yep. So that's where my heart is. But if Cole wins it, it's totally understandable. Honestly, they should share it. I'd like to see the voters actually split it because I have a hard time really splitting the two. But 29 years old, coming off of two brilliant. Obviously with Houston, he's learned a lot. I think he'll take a lot of it with him. I know that, you know, they helped mold him. I don't think he just forgot how to do that and reverts back to the Pittsburgh guy that he was, which was underutilized. I blame that a lot of that on Pittsburgh. So I think Cole's going to go to LA with the Angels. Like I said, they've been rumored already. I really think it makes a lot of sense. And that is where they should put their money.
I think that'd be a phenomenal move. Like you said, they invested in Trout. They have Otani. try to get the best player that we've ever seen play baseball into the playoffs. That'd be pretty cool.
Yeah, please, like, please. And that's the thing too. Maybe I'm also willing that into existence because I want it to happen for that exact reason. I want to see Trout and Ohtani in the playoffs.
Like, he deserves it. We deserve to see him there. It's like, it's ridiculous. The best player's never been in the postseason. Not even that close, really. Well, yeah, once.
JC waxed them 3-0.
Yeah, that was rough. That was a rough sight. Hyunjin Ryu. He went around pick 171 last year, but and has had an amazing season. I think there might have been some recency bias in the two early mocks because when we were doing the mocks, he had a couple 7-earned run starts, a couple 3-earned run starts. Rough go of it there. I don't see him going as far as 114, but at the same time, he never really gets the proper respect, it feels like, Paul. Maybe you think differently than I do, but the guy is super talented. We know there's always an injury concern there. We know there's always the Dodger IL situation. But he's been great this year, and he's come back and been a little better since his last stint on the IL. Where do you see him going in 2020?
I think he actually will go around here or later because of the bias of age and health. First off, age bias is absolutely a thing in fantasy baseball, and he's going to be 33 next year. And this 175 innings that he has, I don't know if he's pitching again this year. People are also going to factor in playoffs. If they make a deep run, they're going to say, well, he went 200 innings, and can he hold up? And durability is an issue with him because he went 1-2 when he first got over here from Korea, from South Korea. And then since then, the highest he'd ever gone 152, including a fully missed season in 15, a 4 2/3 inning season in 2016. But the thing is, since 2017, while the volume has not been there, the skills have been. This is obviously a brilliant season where he's going to lead baseball in ERA for Ryu. But if you just look since 2017, this is not being great for him is not new. He's fourth in ERA since 2017, minimum 380 innings, which brings the threshold down. All the other guys up near him have way more innings. But he had a 197 in about a half season last year and a 377 the year before that, which isn't elite, but it's solid. So if you kind of look at the range there, he could either be sub three again, or if he pushed to like 377, as long as it comes with a good whip. And I think he was a little unlucky in 2017. If I got like a let's call it 350, 115 for 135 innings with just under a shot per inning from Hyunjin Ryu, I'm fine with that. The win potential is going to be substantial because of the Dodgers. You know, he could get lucky and spike wins in like a, 24 start season, or he could be closer to 9 because, he doesn't have as many starts. But I think Ryu, and I think the game that we play in today lower, that you don't need to worry about the fact that he rarely goes, more than 120 things. I think guys can be top 30, top 40 starters with that kind of volume if they're good enough. It was the 33rd starter off the board. So I think if Hyunjin Ryu stays around this level or even drops, which I do think is possible, then I'm going to be in on him and have a few shares for sure.
And there's a very good point you made there on the, doesn't have to throw a ton of innings, A, because of the era that we're living in now, just B, if they're quality over quantity, that's what you want. I was preaching that this past year with guys like Steven Strasburg, and given this year, he's actually thrown a ton of innings out of nowhere. But, you saw all the projections, 160, 170 innings, and people were saying, I need more than that. And I'm like, well, why? If he gives you 170 and gets you a 3.5 or better ERA with all the strikeouts, what are you missing here? I don't get it.
That's good for this because not only, but while it wasn't what you would project, there was the tinge of upside that what if he stays healthy? And he did. And you got 203 innings, an NL best, 17 wins, and then the great ratios that we've been getting throughout his career. The ERA has been a little bit high for an ace, 374 last year, 360 back in 16. But the whip's always excellent. The strikeouts are always excellent. And frankly, even with the lower volume, his wins have always been pretty good. The last 6 years here, or seven, 14, 11, 15, 15, 10, and 17 wins. That's six seasons for Strasburg there. So, Jacob deGrom can't sniff that. He throws 34 starts a season. And in that time frame that I just gave you, Strasburg threw 34 starts just once.
No, it's crazy.
I didn't mean to derail Ryu's discussion into Strasburg, but I've always been a Strasburg guy, and I love what he did this year.
No, I think it's a good transition, like just to kind of discuss strategy-wise, and I know this isn't a strategy podcast, but it's something people need to think about more. Is it's not just, numbers, the end stats are great and all, but there's many ways to get those stats. You mm-hmm. don't have to get them just one way. And I don't think, I'm not saying everybody, but it feels like not enough of that kind of strategy gets put into place, at least where I pay attention to it. Let's go to another guy, Sonny Gray, who, when he went to New York, we've heard it all. We know Eno went and documented the slider usage, all that good stuff. Goes to Cincinnati, where he reunites with his pitching coach, and it's all history from there. He's going pick 111 in the two early mocks, where he went pick 258 in NFBC. Just had some elbow surgery to clean things up yesterday. I don't see that being an issue. No. But Sonny Gray looked phenomenal this year, Paul. Are we buying into this for next year?
Yeah, I think we are, and I think we should. I mean, don't you love when the narrative actually plays out perfectly? I mean, it's exactly what we were talking about, right? Get out of New York, reunite with Derek Johnson, and let's see what's what. And it couldn't have gone any better. 287 ERA, 108 whip, 31 starts. I mean, we'll talk about how he's a smaller right-hander and he's going to struggle with staying healthy. It actually hasn't been too bad. 33, 31, 22, but 27, 23, 31 as far as the starts. And the 23 last year was because of performance, not because of health. He actually made third. And so he's actually been relatively durable. And you mentioned the elbow cleanup to end his season a little bit early for Sonny Gray. But I love so much of what he did. I'm definitely open to buying him. In fact, I like his teammate Luis Castillo and Gray. I'm out on Bauer personally, but if he's just their number three, that's a nice front three that Cincinnati's put together now for next year.
Yeah, they put together a fun little thing there. I think they'll have some cash to spend next year, and they might be a little better than people think. We'll have to wait and see. That division is tough, really
that's
tough
thing. Yep.
And I don't see it changing anytime soon.
No, and I think the Cubs are going to retool. I think Madden's gone. I don't think Theo's gone. I think he'll work and put together some things, trade some guys out, move some assets, and they're going to kind of retool. They're not going to rebuild, of course. They have to retool on the fly. And St. Louis is good. Milwaukee will get healthy and still be good. And I think Pittsburgh's on the down end. But Cincinnati's going to be a team that you didn't really want to mess with them much in the second half of this year, because they had pitching that could really shut you down. If their offense had played like last year, they could have already been scary. But the offense took a step back this year while the pitching took a step up. If they mix the two next year, they could be one of those teams that all of a sudden is one hot streak away from being a wild card contender.
Yeah, no, they were close this year, so I completely agree with you there. Let's go to Tampa. Tyler Glass now, who was pitching phenomenal, got hurt, unfortunately, but then he's come back and he's done kind of the opener thing to kind of get loose, just to get a little more innings in him before the offseason. And he's actually looked great in these last few performances, striking everybody out again, kind of getting our hopes back up for next season. I absolutely love this guy. It's funny, another pitcher gets out of Pittsburgh and look what happens. What's your take on Tyler Glass now? Because some people might be concerned with the injury. I'm not. I think the sky's the limit for this kid.
Oh, anytime somebody has a big injury, but they finish, I'm so much more encouraged by it. Even if it's something like Luke Weaver, who's come back and thrown like a couple, you know, two inning stints here. As long as they're on the field to finish the season, it's so much more encouraging than kind of having that mingle in winter of like, oh, are they, what's going on? And Glasnow has been amazing since returning. This was another one that was a wait and see for me. I wasn't ready to dive in head first the way some folks were based on what he did in 2018 with the Rays. You know, we saw improvements, but that, again, I go back to that command versus control. He improved his control with Tampa Bay, but then his command, which was always bad, stayed bad because he gave up a bunch of homers. So again, it looked like he was just laying the ball in the zone to try to show that he could do it consistently. But he did do it for 55 innings. Then this year, he's really put the two things together. Again, it's only 56 innings, so these are small samples, but we're really seeing the command and control work in unison with the great swing and miss stuff. And this is why people were so hyped on Tyler Glasnow when he was with Pittsburgh. And again, I'll hat tip the believers. I was somebody who was staying cautious. I didn't want to buy it. I don't really see guys at this size figure out things all that often, and sight at this height or near it is like Randy Johnson, one of the all-time greats. You don't have a great case. So I was like, I gotta see it before I'm gonna buy in. I've seen it. It hasn't been for a major inning sample, but I'm buying in on Tyler Glasnow, and I'm open to paying the premium for him next year. And frankly, I don't know who to pull for, because I kind of did the Rays and A's. I like what their front offices do. They have a lot of interesting players. If they end up playing the wild card game, though, Whoever wins that really gives Houston a run for their money, because they're really interesting ball clubs there. And if it is those Rays with Glasnow and Snell, could you imagine if they tandem started those two in a game? Ooh. Like that'd be a super ace for it'd be the same as having just an ace. If you each of them three or four innings and then turn it over to the bullpen.
Yeah, and that's what you, with those teams like that, you wouldn't be surprised if they did. They actually use exactly. their brain when they put their stuff out there. They've actually used these little different strategies to their advantage, unlike some teams where it feels like they're doing it because they have no choice.
They're doing it to do it.
Because it works. And it will be interesting. I'm with you. Like, I live out here in close to the Bay Area. I love to see Oakland. I love this Oakland A's team, just the way they things. But I've always been a Rays fan. Like, you know, Yancey and the guys, they've got me hooked on them the last 3 or 4 years. I take a lot of people off preseason every year because I pick the Rays to at least get the wild card and compete for the East. And people think I'm crazy, but I think those two teams are pesky, and it's like always. You don't want to run into a pesky team in the postseason. That's scary.
Well, and one of the things I learned early when I first started getting into the whole stat revolution and Moneyball and stuff, and that's part of why I like the A's, is because I love the book Moneyball, and that got me into caring about baseball the way I do now. And I could have never guessed that it would become my career, but is something Bill James said: if you're average everywhere, you're a great team. If you're just solid average everywhere, you're a great team. And these two teams have above average at all spots, but they stay above that average line or right at it at virtually every spot. They do it with depth. They do it with prospects. They do it by utilizing their AAA ball clubs. They're always having guys come up and down. It's frustrating for fantasy, but it's brilliant. The two teams work their farm systems into the season.
Yeah, and another way to look at it, if you're average everywhere, you're a good team. It's because if you really look at it, that means you have no holes anywhere,
exactly,
which is tremendous. So that's a great way to break it down. They epitomize that, and that's, you know, when the Giants, you know, won their 3 World Series, they weren't great teams. They were not great at all.
Yeah, they were average everywhere. And they had, again, all three of those teams, the current A's, Rays, and then the great Giants, they have above average spots. You know, Matt Chapman's a superstar, and Blake, when he's pitching, is an ace. But the bottom line is that at every spot, they're making sure that it is at least average.
Yeah, no, that's a great, great point there. A couple more guys we're going to talk about here today. Jake Odorizzi, he's been a godsend to the Minnesota Twins, one of the reasons that helped them win the AL Central. ADP-wise, in two early mocks, going about pick 196, but the guy had a sub-4 ERA. The xFIP was about 4.4, but he gives you about 160 innings. We've seen that 150 to 160 for the most part for 3 straight years. He's one of those guys you can get later in your draft, maybe as your 4th or 5th starting pitcher. What are your thoughts on Odorizzi going into the next year? Because he should be with the Twins again in a very good situation.
This is a guy I like, and I think I'm more inclined to buy in on and not get so hooked on that xFIP, because I think he can kind of beat his peripheral numbers here in each of the last 2 years. He has spotting, but he's a career 10% guy despite a heavy fly ball lean. It's because when he works up in the zone, he's getting pop-ups and playable fly balls. It's to really make that great contact on him with the via the fly ball, and he gets a lot of strikeouts at the top of the zone as well. And then did, because they're very much a forward thinking organization now, is they limited him in innings. It was 5 or 6 pretty much every time out, not pushing him and saying, well, let's try to get that extra inning here. No, you're done. And it's, you know, we don't want you to fall apart. OPS by time through, first time 610, second time 629, third time for Jake Odorizzi 883. So once that third time comes along, unless he's decimating like a Tigers or a Royals or a White Sox, it was time to get him out, and they remained committed to that, and that helped foster a brilliant season. So the market doesn't seem to have reacted too strongly to his breakout season here with a 196 ADP, how Andrew Heaney's going ahead of him. You know, I like Jesus Luzardo, but he hasn't done anything yet. I mean, he actually has pitched in the majors, so I shouldn't say he hasn't done anything. Yeah, but
no starting,
he hasn't done enough
starting value.
Yeah, he hasn't done enough to go ahead of Jake Odorizzi for me. So Caleb Smith going 30 picks higher plus rounds. It's actually 34.
Justin
picks.
Mason drafting in all these.
There's no chance that I'm taking Caleb Smith over Jake Odorizzi, because the thing that you might be worried about with Odorizzi is a home run problem, which is what Caleb Smith already has. So give me the guy on the better team more and been more durable.
I'm 100% with you. I think there's a lot to take home with that one. Last guy we'll talk about today, Eduardo Rodriguez. Kind of hinted at him already. He's going up a pick 146. He was in that Pivetta, Bieber grouping. He kind of got a slow start to the year, but his finish has been nothing short of extraordinary. And it's what we all kind of hoped with Eduardo Rodriguez, and we finally saw it with Eduardo Rodriguez. And he even did it against the big teams like the Yankees. It wasn't just against, you know, the Orioles of the world. He looked really, really good, took that next step, developed another pitch. Are you believing that he can continue this going into 2020?
I do have some interest in him. I've been on the Eduardo Rodriguez merry-go-round quite a few times at this point. He's only going to be 27 next year, but this was his fifth full-ish season, we'll call it. He's had at least 20 starts in each of them. That's a pretty full sample there to call it five seasons of play. You mentioned developing pitch that he can really rely on now, and that's what he was really needing, something that he could go with fastball, changeup. He finally has this cutter here that's definitely served him well. Since May 1st, he's had a 3.31 ERA, but a 1.30 whip. Similar since July 1st, so whichever cutoff you want to use, the ERA is down to 2.74, but the whip's actually even higher at 1.32. And when I see an ERA whip combo that doesn't match, if the whip is the high end, it means the ERA is likely to come up. But if I can get like a 3.40 and 1.27, if it can shave that whip down just a little bit and I can get that low threes ERA, I'll take that, because I actually still think there's a lot of strikeout upside here. He's been at 26, 26, and 25% the last 3 years, which is a good rate. That's about a strikeout per inning or just over for Eduardo Rodriguez. With the way he has swing and miss stuff and when he gets going, I think he could be one of those guys who's up there in the 11, 12 mark, which would be a 27, 28% rate. I still don't think we've seen the best of Rodriguez. Notice that a lot of the aces really become full-blown aces in that 26 to 29 age range and then carried into their 30s. He's going to be 7 next year. Saying the old magic 27 thing that used to be a fantasy staple back in the day. I'm just saying, 5 ups and downs for him. He's had a lot of lower half issues with his health. Finally stays healthy for the big 196-inning season. I think next year could be a big breakout for Eduardo. Where going in the two earlies?
I'm 100% with you. I've been a big Eduardo fan. Seeing him produce was great, and I think you are getting a value where he's going in the two early mocks. So it'll be interesting to see where he goes in a couple weeks in Arizona when you guys do your big drafts, and they've added more drafts this year, so that'll be fun to see what all happens there. And then as the year approaches and more NFBC drafts take place. But Spore, this is always a great time chatting with you. We have many more pitchers to talk about in the future. We'll have to do it again sometime. But before I sign us out, why don't you remind everybody like all the awesome stuff you got going on?
Yeah, let's run it back in the fall for sure, because I went too long and cut off some of the names that we were going to
talk about. No, it's all good, because I'd rather have the free flow discussion more than a straight outline any day of the week.
That works for me too. You can find me on Twitter at Spore. That's S-P-O-R-E-R. I usually tweet out all my stuff there. Fangraphs, fantasy.fangraphs.com. I run the Rotographs side there, and we're going to be going all season. We don't take breaks. We cast the sleeper in the bus. I do writing. I write over there. I do writing. That great, great.
He does talking too. He does talking too.
I also stream on Twitch. Twitch.tv/Spore. That's a video streaming site. I play MLB The Show, and I'm always talking baseball there, always talking fantasy stuff. So if you are one of those diehards that has baseball in the brain all year long, then I'm your guy, because I keep it going all year.
Yep, Spore is a great follow for, like, pretty much if you're listening to the podcast, you know who Paul Spore is. But yeah, go check him out if you don't for some reason, and all his great work. And that Twitch stream is popping at all hours, it seems like. Correct. This is MLB The Show, so go check all that out. And Paul, thanks for joining me, man. Seriously, we will do this again and talk some more pitchers going into the next season.
Thanks so much for having me on, Bubba. Take care.
You too. Everybody, this is Bench with Bubba, episode 214, talking some 2020 starting pitchers with Paul Spore. Catch you guys later.
lives better with an auto policy from American Family Insurance. No matter what dreams you're driving towards. That's because our expert agents will make you feel totally protected with the right auto coverage at the right price. You'll also save up to 23% when you bundle auto with home. American Family Insurance. Get a quote, find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.